A long time ago, when Brahmadatta was reigning the kingdom in Benares, the Bodhisatta was born as an antelope deer. He was sure and swift of foot, with warm dark eyes and sharp curving horns. He loved to wander and browse through the sunny glades and the shady paths of the forest, and he made his home in a thicket in the middle of the woods near a lake. Now, at the top of a tree by that very same lake, there lived a woodpecker, Satapatto. And in that lake, there lived a turtle, Ketchupo. And the antelope deer, the woodpecker, and the turtle were friends. They lived together, and they took care of each other. Now, how did they take care of each other? Well, they told each other stories. The woodpecker's stories had a certain rhythm. Da, da, da. Da, 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 da. Da, da, da. Da, 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 da. The turtle stories were slow and ponderous, and they went on and on and on. And sometimes they went on so long that the antelope deer and the woodpecker fell asleep. But the stories told by the Bodhisatta spoke of things he had seen in the forest. Creatures living their lives, doing what they needed to do to take care of themselves. Sometimes that meant killing. Sometimes that meant teaching their young. And sometimes that meant protecting themselves. One day, a hunter walking through the forest happened to see the hoofprints of the Bodhisatta in the soft earth at the place where he went to drink. The hunter laid a snare. It was made of leather, but it was strong as an iron chain. And he went away. That night, in the first watch of the night, when the Bodhisatta, the antelope deer, came to drink, his foot was caught in the snare, and he cried out with the cry of one who was captured. Down from the top of his tree flew the woodpecker, Satapatto. Out from the water of the lake climbed the turtle, Ketchupo. And the two friends looked at each other and said, "What can we do?" There stood the Bodhisatta with his hind leg caught in the leather snare. He was trembling and frightened. Then the woodpecker said to the turtle, "Ketchupa, my friend, you have a beak. Use your beak to cut this snare, and I will fly through the woods and slow the hunter in his coming." So the turtle came, and he sat down, and he began to chew. Karitum, 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 karitum. And as he chewed, the Bodhisatta murmured his name to encourage him. Ketchupa. Ketchupa, ketchupa, ketchupa. Meanwhile, the woodpecker flew through the woods, and the sound of his wings rising and falling was like the sound of his own name, Satapatto, 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 Satapatto. He flew through the woods and came to the hunter's forest lodge. He alighted in a tree and sat there, listening. When light first appeared in the east, he heard the sound of the hunter stirring inside the lodge. Sure enough, the hunter had taken up his knife. And as he came through the door, down from the top of the tree, flew the woodpecker, flapped his wings and struck the hunter in the face. The hunter was amazed. He turned about, shut the door, and lay down. This was not a good way to start the day. Then the woodpecker thought to himself, the hunter set out by the front door the first time. A second time, he'll set out by the back door. Satapatto flew around the lodge and alighted in a tree at the back. Well, the hunter thought to himself, this bird of evil omen struck me in the face when I set out by the front door. A second time, I'll set out at the back. And so, taking up his knife, he came through the door. And as he came through, down from the tree, flew the woodpecker and struck the hunter in the face a second time. This bird does not wish me to set forth. The hunter was surprised again, and he shut the door and lay down, this time waiting until the sun was high in the sky. And then he took up his knife, and bending low, he opened the door and set forth, moving quickly along the forest path. The woodpecker flew ahead of him, quickly to warn the bodhisattva. The hunter is coming, the hunter is coming. The bodhisattva looked back and saw the hunter with his knife. He looked down, and the leather snare was almost entirely broken through. Only one thin strand remained. But the turtle, his beak was broken. The sides of his mouth were bloody and sore. The bodhisattva broke the snare and leapt into the woods. Just as the hunter came up, the woodpecker flew into the tree, and all the hunter found before him was a turtle, a torn leather snare. But the turtle had a beautiful shell. The hunter picked up the turtle and put it in his leather pouch and closed it tight. The bodhisattva, looking back, he saw that his friend had been seized. And he said to himself, I will give my friend his life. And he feigned weakness. And he made sure the hunter could see him. And sure enough, the hunter did, and thought, this antelope deer is weak. I will catch him easily. And so he set down the leather pouch with the turtle inside, and he followed after, and the bodhisattva led him on trails through the woods, letting him come close, but not too close, and letting him not stray too far behind. And the bodhisattva led him far, far from the lake. And when he knew he was a great distance, he regained his strength, leapt onto the trails, and came back to the lake. He crouched down low and lifted the leather pouch with his sharp horns and let it fall. The pouch split open, and out stepped the turtle. Catchable. Down from the tree flew the woodpecker, Satapatto. And the Bodhisatta said to them, "My friends, you have done for me what ought to be done by a friend. You have given me my life. Now quickly, away. Satapatto, take your young and go. And you, Kachapo, into the lake and hide yourself. And I will disappear in the thicket." And they did. One, two, three, disappeared. And when the hunter came, all he found was the torn leather pouch and the broken leather snare. And he went away, discouraged, disappointed, and hoping that next time he might catch some creatures who didn't have such good friends. Beta nipakam sahayam sarin charam sadu vihari tiram abibuya sabani pariyasani ten attamana satima. If you are a lucky one and find a good friend, a wise one to walk with you, then walk with him, walk with her, overcoming all danger, mindful and happy. Mahasara Jataka. Once, a long time ago, in India, on the banks of the river Ganges, in the holy city of Banaras, there was a king named Ramadatta. And his good friend and advisor was the Bodhisatta. Now one day the king traveled with a great company out of the city to the royal pleasure grove. King and company entered through the walled gates of the garden. There were musicians, there were dancers, there were acrobats, jugglers, all the courtiers, including the Lord High Treasurer and the King's High Priest, and of course all the women of the household in their bright saris and their flashing jewels. Now, the King wandered towards the center of the park, where lotus ponds shimmered under the tall kadamba trees, and peacocks strolled, displaying their feathers of iridescent blue and green, and monkeys swung from tree to tree, watching all the comings and goings of king and company. The king stepped down into the lotus pond, the royal lotus pond. And he was desirous of playing some water sport, and so he called for the women of the household to join him. They smiled and nodded and laughed and began to remove all the jewels they wore about their hair, around their necks, and about their waists. These they set down on their upper robes and placed jewels and robes in open baskets and gave the baskets into the care of their maidservants. And then they too stepped down into the royal lotus ponds. Well, the queen's maidservant was a young girl, and she was determined to do her duty well. And so she sat there, looking about, and watching, and keeping an eye on all the queen's jewels. Now there was another one who had her eye on the queen's jewels. It was a certain monkey who lived in that park. She watched as the queen removed her string of pearls and set it down. How graceful was the queen in her movements, and how bright and shiny were all the queen's ornaments. A sudden longing was born in that monkey to adorn herself, to bedeck herself with the queen's pearl necklace. And so she sat and waited, watching to see if that serving girl, that young serving maiden, might perhaps relax her attention, her awareness, so that that little monkey might slip down and collect the queen's pearl necklace. Now that serving girl was very attentive at first. She saw the other girls chatting, laughing, while they were even weaving tiny wreaths with the flowers that grew in the grass. And at the same time, there was the sound of splashing and laughter from the pond. Oh, it was almost like music, that splashing and laughter. And the day was rather warm, and the shade wasn't providing much coolness. The serving girl, the queen's young serving maiden, began to fall asleep. And as her eyes began to close, quick as the wind, down jumped the monkey, collected the necklace, put it about her neck, and quick as the wind, up she jumped, sat down in the tree, very proud. And then she thought to herself, those other monkeys might see her. She took off the necklace and hid it in the hollow branch of the tree. And there she sat, like one perfectly at ease, where the peacocks cry, like a mournful cat, meow, awoke the girl. Straight away she saw the queen's necklace had disappeared. She didn't know what to do, and so she called out, a man has stolen the queen's necklace, and he's running away. The guards came from here and there, heard what the girl had to say, and reported the matter to the king. The king climbed out of the lotus pond. He said, seize the thief. Well, the guards went here and there through the walled gates of the garden, saying, seize the thief, seize the thief, seize that thief. Calling, crying out, looking here and there and stumbling over each other. Well, at the same time, a poor countryman, a farmer, was on his way home. He had just made an offering to a local deity, a tree deva, in fact. And he heard all this commotion, and it frightened him. And he began to run. And seeing him running, the guards ran after, saying, "Seize that thief, there's our man." They caught him. They began to beat him, saying, "You thought you'd make yourself a wealthy man, did you, taking the queen's pearl necklace?" Well, the countryman, between blows, thought to himself, "If I say I have taken it, perhaps they will not beat me to death. But if I claim my innocence, I am sure to die here and now." And so he said, "Yes, yes, I took it. Stop! Take me to the king," he said. So they stopped their beating. They bound him and led him before the king. The king said, "Did you take the queen's pearl necklace?" "Yes, your majesty," said the farmer. "And where is it now?" said the king. "The Lord High Treasurer told me to take it," said the farmer. "The Lord High Treasurer, he told me to take it, and I gave it to him. He has it now." The king was surprised. He summoned the Lord High Treasurer. He said, "Did you receive the queen's pearl necklace from the hand of this man?" The Lord High Treasurer looked at that ragged farmer. He looked at the king and he said, "Yes, I suppose I did." "Well," said the king, "where is it now?" The treasurer said, "I gave it to my friend, the king's high priest." And so the king's high priest was summoned and brought before the king, and the king said, "Did you receive the queen's pearl necklace from the hand of the treasurer?" The king's high priest looked at his old friend, the treasurer, and he said, "Yes, I did." And the king said, "Well, where is it now?" The priest said, looking about the crowd and hearing a few strands of music, he said, "I gave it to the musician." Well, the musician was brought before the king and the same question put to him. "Do you have the queen's pearl necklace? Was it given to you by the king's high priest?" And the musician looked at the king's chaplain. Puzzled, bemused, he said, "Yes." And the king said, "Well, where is it?" And the musician looked across the crowd of dancers and said, "I gave it to her, that beautiful slave girl over there." Well, she was brought before the king and asked, "Was the queen's pearl necklace given to you by the musician?" She looked at the musician. She said, "I've never seen it. I don't have it. I don't know where it is." By this time, the sun had gone down. And the king said to his advisors, "Take these five away, and tomorrow we will find out the truth." Now the Bodhisatta was the king's advisor, and he had those five would-be thieves taken to a quiet place. And he set one of his serving men to listen to every word they had to say. And when the five were assembled and sitting down, and the serving man standing in one corner, listening with a careful ear. The first one to speak was the Lord High Treasurer, who said to the farmer, "You miserable bag of fleas, when have I ever seen you before? When did you give me the queen's necklace?" The farmer said, "Don't be annoyed with me, your worship. I only said what I did, knowing of your great wisdom and skill, and thinking to myself, you might perhaps help me out of this predicament." The treasurer was not impressed, whereupon the king's high priest said to his old friend, "And when did you give to me that which was never given to you?" To which the treasurer responded, "My friend, don't be annoyed. I thought to myself, since the two of us were well-established statesmen here in the king's court, we could easily extricate ourselves from such a misunderstanding." And then the musician said to the priest, "Well then, when did you give to me this necklace, since it was never given to you?" And the priest said, "Don't be annoyed. I thought if we were to end up altogether confined in some dark, dank prison cell, what comfort it would be to hear your music." The musician, too, was not impressed. And then the courtesan, that beautiful slave girl, she said, "You miserable two-bit strummer, you awkward plucker of vulgar tunes, when have I ever seen you before? When have you ever visited me?" And the musician responded, "My sister, please don't be angry with me. I only thought how pleasant it would be to have your company if all four of us were to be stuck together for some time." Well, their conversation was reported to the Bodhisatta, and the Bodhisatta knew then that not one of them had stolen the queen's necklace. And he thought to himself, "This necklace was stolen outside the walls of the park. Wait a second, it was not stolen outside, it was stolen inside the walls of the park. Moreover, there is a strong guard at the gate." The farmer, he himself, was not in the park. And yet this park swarms with monkeys. I'm sure it was a monkey. But how to catch one? How to catch the monkey who has that necklace? And thinking to himself what the solution might be, he gave orders that necklaces made of simple clay beads be fashioned. And several monkeys were caught, and these monkeys were adorned with necklaces of clay, and the monkeys were set free to wander here and there in the park, which they did, very proud, saying out loud, "See our necklaces, see our pretty necklaces." They wandered here and there and came at last to the tree where that guilty monkey was sitting. And they called up to her, saying, "Look at our necklaces. Don't we have fine necklaces? Wouldn't you like one?" Well, that monkey was furious. How dare they flaunt themselves when their necklaces were only made of clay? She reached into that hollow place, pulled out the queen's pearl necklace, put it about her neck, and down she jumped, wearing something much finer than what they had. Well, the guards saw her. The guards caught her, took off the necklace, and brought it and gave it to the Bodhisatta, who gave it to the king. The king heard the whole story, shook his head in amazement, and said to the Bodhisatta, "You are a friend worth having." In war, they desire a hero. In council, one who is composed, pleasant, cheerful in company, and wise should the need arise. Well, so it was that the king, having thanked the Bodhisatta and having praised him, he honored him with treasures like a cloud showering down rain. And having followed the Bodhisatta's counsel, he and his advisor lived out their lives in goodness and in wisdom. Mahasarajataka. Once, a long time ago, when Brahmadatta was the king, the Bodhisatta was born as a mouse. And he was no ordinary mouse. In fact, when he grew up, he was so large and strong, he was almost the size of a baby pig. and he lived in the forest with hundreds of other mice. They spent their days collecting seeds and nuts, chasing each other among the fallen leaves and over and about the fallen branches, scurrying and darting here and there. Now, a certain jackal, wandering through the woods, happened to notice all this scurrying about of little morsels of mice, and an idea formed in his mind. He scouted about and found an open place between the trees where the sun fell for many hours during the day. And there, in the center of that open space, he chose a nice flat piece of ground. And there he began to practice standing on one leg. He practiced standing on the left front leg, on the right front leg, the left hind leg, the right hind leg, and he found that the right hind leg was the strongest and gave him the most stability. Although, at first, he tumbled over quite a bit, and it was quite hard on his right haunch, and so he gathered about some dry grass and made himself a nice cushiony landing spot. And after some time, he was quite skilled at standing on one leg. And so there he was, in that position, quite well balanced, facing towards the sun, with his mouth open, looking as noble and as sincere as he could. Well, the Bodhisatta mouse, was out one day gathering supplies when he noticed this jackal in the clearing, standing on one leg, with his mouth quite wide open, facing towards the sun. And he was curious, being a curious mouse, and he came up and he said to the jackal, thinking the jackal was some very virtuous being, he said, "Oh, holy one, how shall I address you?" And the jackal said, without altering his position, he said, "I am known as Dhammika, the one who seeks the truth." The Bodhisatta was impressed. He walked about the jackal and he said, "But why are you standing on one leg? Why don't you place all 4 feet on the ground?" The jackal replied, very modestly, "If all 4 of my feet were to land on the earth would not be able to support my weight. It is out of kindness that I am standing on one leg." Bodhisatta was impressed. Again, he circled around the jackal, and he noticed the jackal's mouth wide open, and all his teeth gleaming in the sun. And he said to the jackal, "But why are you standing there with your mouth open?" And the jackal said, "I am drinking the wind. You see, little mouse, air is all I eat. I live on nothing but the air that comes my way." The Bodhisatta felt in his cheek. He could feel the tiny seeds and nuts he had gathered. He loved their chewy texture and their nutty flavor. Air was all very well to breathe, but he couldn't imagine eating it. He was mightily impressed. "Well," he said, "one more question." He had one more question for that virtuous jackal. He said, "But why are you facing the sun? Doesn't it make your head hurt?" And the jackal replied, "No, little mouse. You see, I am honoring the sun. And whatever discomfort I feel is of no matter to me, for honoring the sun is what matters most." The Bodhisatta thought of his busy days hurrying and scurrying about, gathering supplies. How rarely did he ever pause, except sometimes when he was passing through a sunny patch in the forest and he felt the warmth of the sun on the fur of his back. Then, sometimes, for a moment or two, he would stop and feel those sensations of warmth. "Well, good day to you," said the Bodhisatta to the jackal. And he returned to the forest, and he gathered all the mice, and he told them about this virtuous being standing in the clearing on one leg, drinking the air, eating nothing but the wind, and facing the heat of the sun. And he said to the mice, "We must take some time out of our busy day. We must pay our respects to that virtuous jackal." And so the next morning, the mice came in a great troop and paid their respects and did honor to the jackal. Well, some brought little packets of seeds and nuts, even though they knew that the jackal only ate the air. And some bowed down low, and some, thinking it might be a way to pay respect, imitated the jackal and tried standing on one leg, but their bodies were too plump and they fell over. And when they were ready to go, they made a very neat line, nodded to the jackal, and set off into the woods, one by one. Well, the jackal, from his position, standing there, watched them going. And then, very neatly, he dropped down on them to all 4 feet, seized the last mouse in line, took it, grasped it firmly, chewed it, swallowed it, and wiped his mouth, and was satisfied by that small morsel. And this he did, as each day the Bodhisatta and his troop of mice came to pay respects. And gradually, little by little, one by one, the number of mice grew smaller, till they began to notice there weren't quite so many of them in that crowded burrow where they made their home. For soon it was so spacious, they didn't bump up against each other. Why, they had room to stretch. They even had room to do their exercises. Bodhisatta reflected, and he thought, "Ah, something has changed in the routines of the mice." And he knew what it was. He knew the reason why the numbers of the mice were diminishing. And so the next morning, he made sure that he was first in line going to pay homage to the jackal, and that he was last in line when they had paid their respects and were on their way. Now the jackal was so used to his routine, leaping down to all 4 feet, seizing the last mouse in line, and having a nice meal, that he didn't notice that the last mouse in line was much bigger and much stronger than the others. And as he turned and leapt down onto all 4 feet, the Bodhisatta turned about himself and said to the jackal, "My friend, you speak of goodness, but there is no goodness in you. You go about killing innocent beings." And then he uttered this verse. "Listen, I'll tell you a secret. Those who put their goodness on display may not be good or kind at all. Look, see if goodness is a lie." And then the mouse king, the Bodhisatta, jumped up and he fell down on the jackal's throat. He bit down with such strength that he split open the jackal's larynx and he killed him. And the rest of the mice turned about and they tore the jackal limb from limb. I heard that those that came first got flesh, and those that came last got none. And from then on, the mice lived happily in the forest, free from fear. Birara Jataka. A long time ago, when that very same king Brahmadatta, or perhaps another king with the same name, was reigning in Banaras, the Bodhisatta was born as a tree deva, a tree spirit, and he made his home in a royal cell tree, Mangalasala Rukam. And this cell tree was honored by villagers and even by the royal family. And through the centuries, men and women, young women about to be married, women who were married and wished for children, young couples who wished their union to be blessed, those who were sick, those who were aged, would come to the cell tree, make offerings, and ask the cell tree's blessing. Through the centuries they came, and the sal tree grew and grew until it lifted up into the sky. It rose over 100 feet, and its bright shining leaves cast a cool shade, and other sal trees grew up around it in a shady grove. And eventually, the king established his royal pleasure grove in that very place. The underbrush was cleared away, lakes and ponds were dug, fountains and pools were created, and the king came with his company to play in the water, to splash, to enjoy. Now, this king, Brahmadatta, he was a good king, and he did his best to follow the 10 royal virtues. He gave to the poor. He practiced nonviolence. He was aware of his speech and made sure he said nothing to harm another. He practiced kindness, compassion, generosity, and restraint. And he was quite proud of all his virtues. In fact, he was very proud, and he was also a little vain. Vain of his goodness, and also vain of all the fine things he owned. In fact, he was quite vain of his pleasure grove, which he had filled with strange and wonderful creatures. There was the Brahmini duck and the ruddy shell drake, the golden langur, the slow loris, leaf monkeys, and even the shy and elusive binturong, who spent his day curled up in a ball on a shady branch. Now, this king would often travel and visit other kings and see what their establishments were like, admire their pleasure groves and their palaces. And one day, he said to himself, "All these kings, their palaces, like mine, are built on many pillars, strong and sturdy pillars, but always more than one. What if I were to build a palace supported on a single pillar? Ikatambakam pasadam. Wouldn't that be marvelous? Wouldn't that be fine? Acharya. Then I would be the foremost king of all the kings." And so he summoned the royal architects, and he summoned the royal builders, and he said to them, "Build me a single-pillared palace, Ikatambakam Pasadam." And they said, "Sadhu, your majesty, sadhu." The royal architects went to work on their designs. The royal builders set out to the royal sal forest outside of the city, where sal trees grew wild, but they were strong and straight, uju, mahante. And there were many that would have done to build a single-pillared palace, but the way was rough and difficult. It would have been impossible to bring down a tree and bring it to Benares and build a palace there. And so they reported to the king, and he said, "Do what you can. Bring down a tree. I must have my single-pillared palace, Ikatambakam Pasadam." "But your majesty," said the builders, "we cannot bring it from the forest. Let us go to your pleasure grove and look for a tree there." The king reflected. "Very well," he said, "but only take down one tree. So they went into the king's pleasure grove, and what should they find right away but that royal sal tree, Mangala Sala Rukam, where the Bodhisatta, the tree deva, made his home. That is our tree for our single-pillared palace. Ikatambakam Pasadam, they said, and reported to the king, and he said, very well. If you must cut down that royal sal tree, then you must cut it down. And so they returned to the pleasure grove, this time bearing scented wreaths of bright flowers and carrying offerings. And they set those scented wreaths on the branches of the sal tree. They tied a string about its trunk. They lit that lamp. They made their offerings, and they chanted in low voices. And then they spoke, saying, seven days from now, we will return, and we will cut down this tree. Let any tree spirits who live here go now and make their home in another place, and let no harm come to us. Now the tree spirit, the Bodhisatta, heard their words, and he knew they would return. And he reflected that if his great sal tree should come crashing down, how many would have their harms destroyed? For all about him, his deva kindred had made their home in that grove of sal trees. And so that night, he went, adorned in celestial ornaments. He went directly to the king's chamber, and as he entered, he filled the room with one sound, and then he stood beside the king's bed, weeping. Rodamanno, 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 Rodamanno. And the king awoke and saw this being standing there. He was terrified. He said, who are you standing in the night, adorned like a god, shining bright? Why are your tears falling? From where does your fear come? And the tree deva answered, in this great land of yours, O king, they know me as the good sal tree. For 1,000 years I've stood, while great and small have honored me. Homes and towns were built, great king, and many palaces besides, and yet no harm was done to me. So just as they have worshipped me, show your respect to this sal tree. But the king was thinking still of his single-pillared palace, Ikatambakam Pasadam, and he said to the sal tree, but I do not see another tree whose body is so straight and strong. Your form is perfect. This I see. In height and width you'll be for me the pillar of my palace home. Your home as well, my good sal tree. And the Bodhisatta, the tree deva, understood the force of the king's desire, and he said, if I must leave my home, this tree, which is my body. Then I ask that I be cut, not all at once, but branch by branch, in pieces small enough to fall among my kin, the top, the middle, and the root. And in this way, no harm will come to those who grow close to my home. The king was puzzled. But why should the sal tree, the mighty sal tree, want to be cut in this way? And he said, just as one might cut off hands, feet, ears, nose, and from behind the head, leaving a human being dead. That is a painful way to die. Broken in this way, your ease cut off. Why, for what reason, good sal tree, do you wish to be cut in pieces, Kandaso? And then the good sal tree spoke in response. He said, listen to me, great king, and hear a truth which is the ground of life, a truth that guides me in my wish to see my limbs fall one by one, safe and protected by my side. My Deva kindred live in peace. But if my ancient home should fall, much harm would come to one and all. The king understood now and was moved and struck by the compassion of the tree deva. He thought to himself, this deva, this being, is great in his compassion. He does not wish the homes of his fellow deva to be destroyed as a result of the destruction of his own home. His actions benefit others. His kindness, his compassion benefit all. I will give him freedom from all fear. And so he spoke one final verse. Lord of the forest, good sal tree, how noble are your thoughts. I see you wish the welfare of your kin. I give you safety and freedom. And so the tree deva, he instructed the king, he spoke Dhamma to him. He instructed the king in kindness and goodness, and he returned to his sal tree, Mangalasala Rukam. And the king, he followed the devas, the bodhisattva's instruction, and he did so much good throughout his life. Bada sala chattaka.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Doc.
Thank you.